From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Cameras don't lie. They may not capture the whole truth, but they don't lie. The South Carolina video showing a police officer repeatedly shooting Walter Scott in the back as he ran, then striding over to apparently plant evidence by his dying body, has shocked everyone. It hasn't surprised everyone, though. Even if Officer Michael Slager is an outlier, there seem to be too many outliers in this nation's police forces. Now the call for police to wear cameras is heard everywhere. Will that be enough? This hour on Point, the shooting in North Charleston, the call for more cameras, and what's being laid bare here. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you see in this video? Do you see murder? Will cameras on cops put an end to a national problem? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here's the sound of those shots being fired, captured on video taken by Faden Santana, who was kind of hidden in the bushes. Just kind of a miracle that this was caught on a bypasser's cell phone camera shows South Carolina police officer Michael Slager, who is white, shooting 50-year-old Walter Scott Black as Scott ran away. Down he came. He died. In a news conference on Tuesday, North Charleston Mayor Keith Summey announced the officer Slager was arrested for fatally shooting Walter Scott.
I can tell you that as the result of that video and the bad decision made by our officer, he will be charged with murder.
Fired and charged with murder. On Wednesday, the day after the videotape was released, protesters gathered in front of the North Charleston's City Hall.
All lives matter! All lives matter! All lives matter!
All lives matter, they're chanting there. In a few moments, we'll speak with Anthony Scott, whose brother, Walter, lay dying at Officer Slager's feet in the now infamous video. But first, for the timeline and facts, we turn to reporter Andrew Knapp in Charleston, South Carolina. He's been covering this story for the Post and Courier there. Andrew Knapp, welcome to On Point. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
What's the status of the officer now? Is he in jail?
Yes, and he's actually being held in protective custody there, away from the general population, because there is some fear, at least on the part of the jail officials, that other inmates pose a threat to him because he's a former police officer.
How is this case likely to proceed at this point, Andrew?
Well, his attorney, he hired a new attorney yesterday, one a very high-profile lawyer in the Charleston area named Andy Savage, and he will likely request a bond hearing that will happen in a few weeks in front of a circuit court judge, and he or she will weigh several factors in deciding whether to grant bail for Mr. Slager.
Now, I'm looking back here at the first statement that came out of the North Charleston Police Department. It says there was an altercation between an officer and a driver, suspect. Took place, resulting in a struggle over the officer's taser. This is before the video came out. It says, during the struggle, the driver suspect gained control of the taser to use it against the officer. This is before the video came out. The officer discharged his service weapon to stop the threat, even though life-saving efforts were conducted. This is before the video. Prior to the EMS's arrival, the suspect was pronounced deceased. I mean, almost every part of that seems to have been disproved by the video. If not for the video, Andrew, is this what would have stood as the facts of Walter Scott's death?
Well, excuse me, Tom. That is, people here say that without the video, the police officer's account of the incident might have stood. And the video directly resulted in his arrest. That is certain.
I'm looking here at a report from the state saying that in the last 5 years, South Carolina officers fired their weapons at 209 suspects, only a handful accused of pulling the trigger illegally, none convicted. Do we have a bigger problem? When you look at that tape of the officer, so, you know, I know a lot was going on here, but he looks so calm. He looks, in the video, almost nonchalant shooting after Walter Scott. He looks kind of entitled. When this man is clearly, at least to my eye, I'm not a policeman, but as a citizen, he's not being threatened by Walter Scott.
Yeah, he certainly takes the typical stance to in order to fire his gun, and does so very calmly and fires seven rapid shots, and then there's a brief pause and one final shot. So he does appear very calm during that.
Calm, but what possible explanation could there be for that kind of shooting? It looks, again, I'm speaking as a layman here, but it looks like the policeman was offended by this man, or embarrassed by this man, or just, angry at this man. You can't see a risk, a threat to Officer Slager at this time.
You know, we don't know for certain what happened before the video was recorded, but there certainly was a witness to it, and so I think that'll all come out. But the state's Stand Your Ground law says something about a threat subsiding. So if he did ever feel threatened during any struggle with Mr. Scott, then you could arguably say that that threat subsided when Mr. Scott started to run away.
And we see what looks like the taser kind of dangling from Scott's body, the wires maybe. The officer seems to pick that up and take it over to his body and drop it by him. It looks like, tell me if I'm wrong, it looks like a planting of evidence.
That is what most people are speculating. The authorities investigating have not said any which way about that. But we also do see Officer Slager pick up something after he dropped it. And we don't know if that was the same thing he dropped or not, but he picks it up and puts it on his duty belt. So there are still questions that need to be answered.
What's the context for this, Andrew? You report for the Post and Courier there. Is North Charleston, it's a town, 47% African American.
Right.
It's not an affluent town by any means. It has its struggles. Is this a police department with a reputation for casual violence against local citizens?
Yeah, it certainly does have that reputation. The city was formed back in 1975, and since then it has dealt with it throughout all those years. There have been incidents occasionally in which mainly young black men have been the subject of police firing their weapons, and they have caused controversy throughout the course of the city's history. And I think this is by far the most serious incident the city has seen.
What's the conversation this has provoked? In the aftermath of Ferguson and everything else, the officials who have come forward seem quite quick, once the video was out, not before,
right,
but once the video was out, to come out and say, wrong, murder, fired. What's the conversation that you are privy to in the white community, the black community?
Well, I mean, it was quite striking to hear the mayor yesterday saying that he's inviting the community in to actually give input on police policies and procedures. We've seen some effort toward that over the past few years because of the complaints, that strained relationship between the residents and the police department. But it seems like this incident will actually drive that conversation on to maybe cause some actual change.
And cameras on the police in North Charleston, we know that was in the works. Will it be on everybody now?
It was in the works when this incident happened. The city had ordered 101 of them. They're now buying another 150 of them to outfit every uniformed patrol officer in the department. So if we have a situation like this again, there might be video from the officer himself.
Andrew Knapp with the Post and Courier in Charleston, South Carolina. Andrew, thank you very much. Keep reporting. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much, Tom.
After he shot Walter Scott, Officer Michael Slager called for backup. And here's the radio transmission between Slager and the dispatcher. You can hear other officers saying they're headed to the scene, asking for directions. Then Officer Slager tells the dispatcher what happened. His version, not expecting that video of the whole thing would come out, I guess.
223 dispatch, shots fired. Subject is down. You grab my taser.
Dispatch, copy 223. Shots fired. He grabs your taser. Subject is down.
Very much down. Walter Scott would die. The word was that he was trying to revive him. There's no video evidence of that. He cuffed him and left him on the ground there. With us right now from Charleston, South Carolina, Anthony Scott, brother of Walter Lamar Scott, who was shot on Saturday. Anthony Scott, thank you very much for being with us. I'm sorry for your family's loss. How are you dealing with it at this point?
Actually, I'm not dealing with it very well. After watching the video, it's just totally disgusting that someone would shoot down another human being in that way. And it didn't matter what race. It just to be gunned down in that manner, running for your life, is just a senseless act. Senseless act.
How do you read? You must have watched it and maybe watched it more than once. We're not saying that you're judge and jury here, but how do you read what you see, Anthony?
What I see is a man running away, trying to get away from the taser. And at that point, I think I might have done the same thing, run away from being tased, or at least try to get away, because you could tell that he wasn't running at his full speed, but there was no attempt to even try to run after him. There was no attempt to even try to wrestle him.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing this officer did is drop the taser, or whatever he had in his right hand at
mm-hmm.
the time,
mm-hmm.
pull out his revolver, get in his shooting stance, and commence the shooting.
And all of this because of a traffic stop in which your brother Walter's car, his Mercedes, apparently had a rear taillight out. You know that car of his?
I do.
I see a picture of it here. It looks in pretty good shape.
It looks in pretty good shape. And a matter of fact, I was told by a gentleman that him and my brother checked out the car thoroughly, because this is North Charleston area. You don't ride with anything incorrect in your vehicle because you will be subject to stop. And so I'm almost certain that this vehicle had no issues. But I'm getting the car back today. But I'm checking out the vehicle today. But I'm almost certain it had nothing wrong with that car.
Anthony Scott, would you stand by for a minute there in Charleston? Can you stick with us for a minute here?
Actually, I have about a minute more.
Okay, we'll be right back to Anthony Scott, brother of Walter Scott, killed on Saturday by Officer Michael Slager, now charged with murder in North Charleston, South Carolina. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking about the South Carolina shooting. Everybody has seen the video now of the policeman, Michael Slager, who gunned down Walter Scott, 50 years old, running away from the officer after a traffic stop in North Charleston, South Carolina. Walter Scott's brother, Anthony Scott, is with us from Charleston, South Carolina right now. And I know you've just got another minute, Anthony. I want to ask you this. You talked to the Associated Press. You said you weren't sure that race even played a role here. You're not sure that the taillight was actually out. Then what's going on?
Okay, I'm saying that because you could be an Hispanic, you can be a poor white person,
yep.
and you can still have the same thing happen to you in North Charleston. So I can't necessarily say that was the main reason, the racial thing, because I don't know what was on the mind of that officer, but I do know this right here. Something has to be done where they can be more accountable for the actions that they take on any individual.
Anthony Scott, we are sorry again for the loss your family has had in this last week, the loss of your brother, Walter, and we're grateful to you for being with us. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Anthony Scott, brother of Walter Lamar Scott, who was gunned down by a policeman now charged with murder in North Charleston on Saturday. We're talking about that stunning video, the policeman charged with murder, the new clamor for cameras on cops, and what is being laid bare here. With us right now from Charleston, South Carolina, is Justin Bamberg. He's a Democratic state representative serving the District 90 there, encompasses Bamberg County, west of North Charleston. He's also a partner in the law firm of Bamberg, Barnwell, and Culleton. They're representing the family of Walter Scott, planning to file a civil lawsuit in this case. Justin Bamberg, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
What happened here?
I think it is very clear from watching the video what happened here. We have a law enforcement officer who is charged with the duty of protecting and serving the public, who unjustifiably guns down Mr. Scott.
In the attitude and posture of this policeman as he fired, I found it deeply, deeply disturbing. There's a casualness about it, to my eye as a layman, that even if it were, a dog in among the sheep, you might be more concerned. It just seemed so how do you read the body language of this caught on video?
Tom, it is extremely disturbing, and I will tell you that I have seen this video, I'm willing to say hundreds of times by now, and each time I watch it, it is no easier than the time before. Let me start off by telling you, and I think this is extremely important for a number of reasons. I come from a family of law enforcement. Both my mother and my father have served in law enforcement for over 25 years each. I have a younger brother who is in law enforcement. I have an uncle who is in law enforcement. Friends, what this officer did is disgraceful to the uniform and the badge that not just my family members, but every officer in South Carolina and across the United States of America wears, takes seriously, and holds true to the values that they are supposed to, the oath that they take. And this officer has disgraced each and every one of them. His body language, to me, indicates, I'm going to shoot, and that's it. If you look at him, I mean, he looks clean. You know, his uniform, his shirt is not undone. Yeah. His stance, he's not, his body language does not indicate somebody who would be in fear of imminent bodily injury or death for himself or anyone else. He's not shaking. He's not jittery. And what is even more disturbing is if you watch the first shot, and I'm approximating as to the footage here, but it appears that the first shot he takes at Mr. Scott's back is when Mr. Scott is maybe 15 feet away from him.
Mm-hmm.
And
running away.
What is 15 feet away.
And running away as well.
Running away in what is beginning and will turn into a full sprint for Mr. Scott. And he fires the first shot. He fires six rapid succession shots. And after that seventh shot, you see him pause for about 2 to 3 seconds and then fire the eighth shot, at which point Mr. Scott falls face first into the grass. That is absolutely horrible. It is deplorable. It is the most egregious conduct that I have witnessed on tape with regards to an officer-involved shooting or any other type of excessive force claim in recent history.
Shooting down a human being, and we only know about it, it would appear, because of this cell phone video. It was taken by Faden Santana. He talked with MSNBC's Craig Melvin yesterday, and this is the guy who took the film. The officer didn't see him there. He was, 40 feet away. And here's Santana saying that as he took this video, and after, he feared for his own life. I don't blame him.
I won't deny that I knew, the magnitude of this, and I even thought about erasing the video. And
why?
I felt that my life with this information might be in danger. I thought about erasing the video and just getting out of the community, Charleston, and leaving someplace else.
Leaving town?
Yes.
Because you were that scared?
Yeah.
Faden Santana, who took the video that's brought all this to light, so frightened even of having it, he thought about erasing it and leaving town. Vicki in Knoxville, Tennessee. Vicki, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
I just want to say thanks to the guy that took the video. Otherwise, this policeman probably would have got away with cold-blooded murder, and there's nothing anybody can call it except for cold-blooded murder. And I just feel so bad for the family.
Yes, I guess everyone does, Vicki. And I appreciate your call very much. Let me get one more. Raymond in Green Pond, South Carolina. Raymond, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom, and thank you very, very much. I mean, not just for this topic, but for all topics that you broach from time to time concerning our African Americans and unfair treatment. I seen the video, I was outraged, but I wasn't surprised because I've had contact with these police officers in Charleston, South Carolina. As a matter of fact, I was arrested one time on a minor traffic violation, and when they locked me up on Lee's Avenue, that jail is full of African Americans, Hispanics, and poor white folks. Poor white folks, they seem to have a total disregard for any type of decent outreach to people. I mean, it's do as I say, not as I do. You know, I mean, you have no recourse. If you even open up your mouth to say anything wrong, if you even pull out a phone and they see you with a phone about to record them, you got a world of problems. So I can understand, Mr. I believe it is Santana's concern.
Yes.
Yeah, because it's very real, and it happens every day. Even living here in Waltsboro now, like I said, I only live a few minutes from Charleston, so I frequent that area a great deal. But I stay in Waltsboro, and even here we have an issue with the sheriff right now. Because, you know, I mean, the racism, it is just off the chain. It's just unexplainable. But like I said, I've been meaning to just tell you thank you for broaching so many of these issues that concern the African-American community and the community at whole. Because, you know, if we do not have the trust enough to deal with the policemen, mm-hmm. you know, you know, I'm just at a loss for words, but I mainly called to say thank you, Tom.
Raymond, you are very welcome, sir, and I appreciate your call very much, very much. Here's a little bit more from the guy who took the video. Brave guy to keep shooting the video while the officer kept shooting Walter Scott, Faden Santana.
He made a bad decision, and does, you know, you pay for your decisions in this life, you know, and I think, like I say, Mr. Scott didn't deserve this, and there were another ways, you know, that can be used to get him arrested, and that wasn't the proper way to do that.
Not the proper way. I guess not. Justin Bradberg, please stand by in Charleston, South Carolina. With us right now from Washington, Ron Hosko. He's president of the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund. It protects the rights of law enforcement professionals. Spent 30 years at the FBI. Ron Hosko, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
And with us from Newark in Delaware, Gloria Brown Marshall is with us. She's a professor in the Department of Law, Police Science, Criminal Justice Administration at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, professor of constitutional law, author of Race, Law, and American Society, and the U.S. Constitution. And the forthcoming, She Took Justice, The Rise of Black Women in America. Gloria Brown Marshall, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Ron Hosko, your group protects the rights of law enforcement professionals. Can you see, from what you've seen, any defense of what happened here?
Tom, the video is deeply troubling. You know, from the perspective of my organization that does work to defend and protect the rights of law enforcement officers who are accused, you know, I am not going to sit here and say I'm ready to convict Officer Slager with this video. That being said, I mean, that's not my job. That's the job of a judge or a jury in South Carolina. You know, from looking at the video a few times, it is deeply troubling for this officer. I can see where the judgments that have been reached already are reached by reasonable people. It is very concerning, you know, and my hope is that the public don't use this video to define police across the country because it doesn't define them.
But we have seen incident after incident, and of course, just the ones that come to light because of some video or some public face that makes a lot of Americans concerned that there is a substantial substrata of this kind of behavior. Do you think we've got a problem here? How can we not see a problem here? And if we do, how do we get rid of it?
Well, I think there's a lot of layers to this conversation. And one of those, a significant one, is what happened in Ferguson, Missouri, 9 months ago. And a lot of folks, you know, chose up sides in the wake of the engagement between Darren Wilson and Michael Brown. And it took 7 months for the attorney general to unravel that and really acquit Darren Wilson of any wrongdoing whatsoever.
It acquitted him, but it exposed a community that clearly felt abused over time. And then we saw the Eric Garner in New York. We saw more in Ohio. You've got this on film here. It doesn't seem like an isolated incident.
No, and across the country, because of the profile of these incidents, and certainly this one, there has been an erosion of trust in law enforcement writ large, and hence this conversation, and I think it's a very appropriate one, about body cameras.
Gloria Brown Marshall, you've no doubt watched the video, maybe multiple times, as many people have, sort of just, it's so astonishing to see, not surprising, people say, unfortunately, but nevertheless, deeply disturbing. What have you seen there, Gloria?
Well, I'm speaking as a person who's researched race and the law over the last, you know, as it's evolved over the last 400 years. And what I'm seeing will be the vestiges of what's been going on for so long, and that is the abuse of black people in this country and other people of color. But so often the black community is under this oppressive force where we should be protected by police officers. We are not in too many instances. In this instance in particular, we have a camera that is showing what the police officer did. But on the flip side, if we would have only had the testimony of people in the community or even just Mr. Santana's testimony without mm-hmm. the camera, mm-hmm. what would be the result? We would probably have another issue or incident in which the police officer would have walked free.
You know, I just one thing I want to raise here. The State, another newspaper in South Carolina, did this study looking over 5 years. They found South Carolina officers had fired their weapons at 209 suspects. Very, very few accused of pulling the trigger illegally. None convicted. But it was interesting, the numbers here. 101 of those were African-American. 34 of them died. 67 were white, Gloria. 41 of them died. 5 were Latino or Asian, Native American. 4 of them, 4 out of 5 died. 36 others, they didn't have racial information. But there's a lot of shooting going on here and a lot of people being killed.
Yes, it's actually a human rights violation, and that's what we're looking at. We're going to have to take this issue to the world stage. We had in 2014 the United Nations give a report by the High Commissioner of Human Rights that our policing issue here is of concern to them. We have a convention on the elimination of all forms of racial discrimination, and there was a report that was released last fall in which that commission found that there were problems with policing, racial profiling, excessive force, and that a lot of those issues were part of the African-American community and the larger community as well. So this is an international human rights issue that we have right here in this country. And as we look at the Boston bombing and we see that the due process that we so are so proud to speak of in this country is given to someone in a terrorist bombing, and yet we have police officers acting as judge, jury, and executioner in our own communities. And this conflict is something we're going to have to resolve within the country, but I do believe we're going to have to take this issue to the world stage.
All right. But in the end, Americans are going to have to deal with it, won't they? I mean, the UN is not going to change our fabric of law enforcement.
No, what happens very often, we did this with lynching in this country. We had to go to the United Nations on this issue of lynching. We did it actually even with slavery. Frederick Douglass would go to other parts of the world to discuss our issue. Sometimes we have to have international embarrassment to reel in what is a domestic issue. And as someone who works with constitutional law issues and teaches around that topic, I also look at international human rights issues. We need to see the connection between what we want out of our country and what we're actually doing.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the South Carolina shooting, North Charleston, the stunning video, the policeman charged with murder, the new clamor for cameras on cops, and what is being laid out here, laid bare. At a Tuesday press conference, only after the release of the video, North Charleston Police Chief Edgar Driggers described his feelings about what he saw his officer Michael Slager, do on that videotape.
I think that all of these police officers on this force, men and women, are like my children. So you tell me how a father would react to seeing this child do something.
Well, with murder charges in this case, a protest organizer outside North Charleston City Hall yesterday asked the community to start taping police interactions themselves.
If you have a camera and you see somebody pulled over in North Charleston, let's let City North Charleston Police know right now we're going to be stopping and we're going to be recording every single time. Every single time.
There are certainly cell phones and cameras all over now. On the other hand, here's James Clyburn, Democrat, South Carolina, highest ranking African American in the House of Representatives, talking with Andrew Mitchell on MSNBC, said he wants police reform, but mandatory cameras, he said, would not be enough, wouldn't do it.
I still am not comfortable with just dealing with police cameras. We got to deal with police training, and we got to deal with sensitivity. Just having the cameras there to help verify what you're doing, I don't think that gets at the issue at all.
Justin Bamberg is with us from Charleston, Democratic state rep there. Gloria Brown Marshall with us from Newark, Delaware, and John Jay College of Criminal Justice. Ron Hosko from Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund. They protect the rights of law enforcement professionals. Lucius is calling from Franklin, Tennessee. Lucius, you're on the air.
Yes, Tom, thanks for taking my call, and my thoughts and prayers are still with your family.
Thank you, sir.
I'd like to say that no one has really mentioned about the police being trained about de-escalating a situation. I'd like for your panel to address that. Is there something called de-escalating a situation before all this stuff happens?
Did you see any evidence of any effort to de-escalate? I mean, all I saw was the policeman shooting a 50-year-old guy who's running away.
That's what I'm saying. Whether he's blue, black, gray, or polka dot, do these guys de-escalate a situation? I think it's about behavior, but do they de-escalate a situation for all this stuff gets going?
I'll put it to our panel. Justin Bamberg, first to you. Did you see any evidence of effort to de-escalate here? I mean, again, as a layman, just looking at this video, and this is not a full trial, I don't know, but it looked, the appearance of it, if you just looked at it as a theater within that video, it looked like an officer saying, "You tussle with me or something, you're going to die."
Tom, let me start by saying this. There is no evidence of de-escalating anything in the video. And one thing that I want to point out that I think is extra egregious is that, and you watch closely, you see that the officer appears to have Mr. Scott by the wrist, at which point Mr. Scott breaks free and turns to run. The officer then grabs his service pistol and begins to take aim. Now, over the next couple of seconds between that point and when Mr. Scott is face down in the ground, the only thing you hear are 8 gunshots. There is no stop. There is no stop or I'll shoot. There is no. And this is very important because the officer claims that Mr. Scott took the taser. There is no drop the taser, drop the weapon. Oddly enough, we do not hear the officer say anything until after Mr. Scott is face down in the grass, not moving. The officer yells something to the extent of, "Put your arms behind your back."
So he can cuff him, which he does.
Which he does. But if he was dead silent while Mr. Scott was moving, he waits until Mr. Scott is face down after being shot 5 times to make his first command. There was no action. There was no verbal commands to indicate that he tried to do anything other than gun down Mr. Scott, unfortunately.
Gloria Brown Marshall at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. Again, in what we can see, and who I don't know how more video might change the story, but it's hard to picture it. It looks like an almost attitude of entitlement on the part of this policeman. Like, you've offended me, or and so here we go. You're going down.
Well, let's look at it two ways. Under the Supreme Court decision of Tennessee versus Garner, a police officer who's been offended or in any way feels threatened has to have a significant threat to that officer or to the community before they can use deadly force. So the Ferguson effect here that came out of the whole Ferguson case and, of course, the Department of Justice report is that these police officers are not either being trained properly when it comes to the use of deadly force, or they're deciding to ignore that training in certain instances because they feel that they can act with impunity. So the power of Ferguson and the power of the protests that followed the Eric Garner case is that we all know as a community, this country, that a police officer is not supposed to act in this way. We also know that they're trained not to act this way. They're trained to de-escalate. So that must mean they're choosing not to follow their training.
Ron Hosko, I understand neither you nor we are judge and jury here, but can you picture a justification for this shooting when a man is running away like that, given that the Supreme Court ruling is pretty clear that the suspect has to pose a significant threat of death or serious physical injury to the officer or others? Can you see it? Can you picture it, Ron?
I can't, based on all I've seen in the video, and as you and Gloria have mentioned, that threat must be imminent. And as Mr. Scott is running from the officer, not turning toward him as though he might have a weapon that would create a reasonable impression that there is an imminent threat of serious bodily harm, you don't see it in that video. It is very concerning. You know, going back to Lucius's question about de-escalation, mm-hmm. and Gloria's comment about it, they're right on the mark. And I think this encounter brings up issues of training. What was the training of this officer? How rigorous is that training? How frequent is it? We've seen it in the president's policing commission report recently on the need for greater community engagement, greater training. Saw it in the DOJ COPS report about Philadelphia Police Department about 2 weeks ago. Same issues arise. Is the training?
Yeah, but I see potentially an issue deeper than training here. You can train someone, but if they have a fundamental mindset that feels entitled to do what he did, if he's not witnessed, and he didn't think he was being witnessed, it would appear, can you really tamp that out with training?
The starting point has to be who we hire. What is the mindset of the young officer who we're taking on board? What do they really think their job is? Is it about community service and community engagement and keeping the community safe, or is it about abuse? And what does the leadership of the department look like? And this applies to any department across the United States. What is the ethos of the leader of the department from top down?
Well, they sure came out once the video was out with murder charges in a hurry. It wasn't this slow tooth extraction like Ferguson.
Now, you know, Tom, too often in our country, regardless whether it's policing or any other issue, the biggest response is on the backside of a crisis.
Yeah.
And this report, the report on the activities of the Ferguson Police Department and the court system there is really what law enforcement leaders across the country ought to be looking at and reading and saying, how can I avoid this happening to me in my department
before it happens? James in Columbia, South Carolina. James, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I think that the news needs to kind of tone it down a little bit. They're sensationalizing everything, and they're not really giving true reporting. I've seen a video several times. They say that he shot him. He went over non-responsive. His head is up. How can you say that? They don't report what happens at the car. Why did he run? Why did he run the second time? You know, and they just keep saying that an officer killed a black man. That's very devastating. I'll agree with that. But they're not reporting the whole story. They refuse to report the whole story because they want to sensationalize what happened.
James, let me respond to that for just a second here, because I, too, would like to know the whole story. I would very much like to know. You heard Walter Scott's brother, Anthony, talking with us earlier in this hour, saying he didn't even think there was a taillight out. Well, who knows? We have no idea. Why were they back there behind the pawn shop? Why had he run there in the first place? Why, you know, what happened to me? I'd like to know all that. What happened immediately before this? Why on earth would Officer Slager think it was okay to pull out his pistol and shoot this guy? I would like to know all that. But, James, in fairness, isn't the video itself, I mean, sensational looks like the least of the words you might attach. Just look at it. It looks absolutely terrible, doesn't it?
It does. Any civilized person would look at something like that and say, that's horrible. But you have to be a police officer to understand what happened. Nobody has any idea other than a visual picture of what happened.
But this police officer apparently was willing to completely lie about what happened. If it wasn't for this video, we wouldn't know.
He didn't lie. He said he grabbed my taser. He didn't say he's running off with my taser. He said he went over and put the taser down, and then he called for backup. No, he went over there, and no more than 2 seconds later, another officer is on the scene.
Well, I mean, he did. He dropped something by the body. He said he gave him CPR, which he didn't. James, but I appreciate your desire to know the whole story here, and I wish we did. Justin Bamberg, do you have a sense that there could possibly be more to this story that could explain this extraordinary, deeply disturbing clip of video?
Yes, Tom, and I was waiting on the opportunity to address this point. There are numerous questions and things that need to be answered by the folks who are out there. As you may know, the incident reports from the North Charleston Police Department have been released. And I can say this, and I have worked a lot of cases. I have seen minor car wrecks with more factual detail in the incident report than any of the pages that I looked at for the incident reports for this instance. In my point of view and in my mind, when I read the words on the pages of these incident reports, statements from the officers, what they say to me is, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil, because they tell us absolutely nothing. We don't know who saw what. We don't know. And the officer was carrying a Glock 45 caliber pistol. When he shoots that thing, everybody in the vicinity can hear exactly how many shots.
Yep.
I want to know what the officers heard. I want to know what the subject officer said and stated to them. I want the whole picture. And when I see what I see in the incident reports, it leads me to believe that there is more to the story, that they knew this was a bad shoot, and that they very likely may have contributed to an attempt to either cover up or give the officer some wiggle room in the future, because they knew it was going to be a problem, to give him some wiggle room to possibly try to justify why he gunned down my client, gunned down Mr. Scott, gunned down this father, this brother, this child.
I mean, he is your client.
Blood.
We've got that. There's a lot we don't know here yet. Disturbing video, though. Paul in Boston, you're on the air, Paul.
Hi, good. Tom, nice to talk to you. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I just wanted to address a couple things. I know I don't have a lot of time. What you call casual, I see it as training. I've had a lot of similar training that law enforcement gets.
So you call him, it's more like cool, like he was coolly trained in the manner that he shot, but the guy wasn't running at him and he wasn't threatening him.
Oh, I know. It was, for all accounts, it was unjustified.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I know that when you are in a situation like that, you will find yourself in a very tight tunnel vision, and you think of the fundamentals of your training, and he went right to marksmanship.
Paul, I got our time is short. You say training took over, but what about the training that says don't kill a fleeing man who's not a threat? I appreciate your call, Paul. Our time is short. One more. Joe in Florida City, Florida. Joe, you're on.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. That's kind of right where I want to take off at, too, was that the training. I think that's, as an officer, I can tell you, it's one of those things where over the years, probably the past 30, 40, maybe even longer years, we've emphasized way too much on training and very little emphasis on recruitment. We're not recruiting the proper people into these jobs.
Are you a police officer, Joe?
I am.
And you don't see the right people being brought in? What's the problem?
Over the years, there's been a big push for the overemphasis of education. So you have these really smart people that are being hired into these jobs, and it's wonderful that these people are really smart. They've got these degrees. They have all these wonderful things. But time and time and time again, what we deal with out in the field is people with very poor decision-making and problem-solving skills, very poor. And you're trying to retrain. You're trying to cover those things up with training. The problem is life skills are not prepared. DC developers have the life skills to do those.
Joe, our time's short here. Officer Slager facing big problems now. Gloria Brown-Marshall, how much would body cams help here?
I think, pardon the pun, body cams are great, but they're not a magic bullet, that we have to look at not just what people are trained to do, but what they're ignoring as they're training. I agree that, you know, the people being brought in don't have a lot of the life skills that they need, but they do have a degree. As someone who teaches them, they do. But I also know that African Americans are being terrorized and other people are being terrorized in their own communities. And we have to look at the deepness of racism in this country, when in the effect that it has as we go forward as a nation. If we're going to be the world's democracy, we've got to do better than this.
Gloria Brown-Marshall at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, joining us from Newark, Delaware today. Professor Brown-Marshall, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Ron Hosko, president of the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund, joining us out of Washington today. 30 years in the FBI. Ron, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
And Justin Bamberg, Democratic State Rep, serving South Carolina's District 90, encompasses the west. It's west of North Charleston there. Justin Bamberg, Representative Bamberg, thank you very much for your time. Also representing the Scott family in an anticipated civil lawsuit in this case. We'll be watching that. Justin Bamberg, thank you.
Thank you so very much.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm at Tom Ashbrook, NPR on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. This is On Point.